We are on camera, is that correct?
No.
Great.
No.
Even better.
You can be as silly looking as you want.
Great, perfect.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to a very special ASMR edition of How to Write a Joke. I have a very exciting and fun guest today who is going to cover topics such as disciplined chaos, organizing your thoughts, how important point of view is, and, of course, how jacked Carrot Top is. I hope that you guys enjoy my conversation with Ian Abramson. Stay tuned. How to write a joke. Hi, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to How to Write a Joke, a podcast about jokes and the people who write them. My name is Cassidy Kulhanick. I am a comedian, and I love the act of doing comedy. But when it comes down to it, I'm not so great at the act of writing comedy. And that's why every episode I bring on a guest whose joke writing ability I respect and admire, and I do my best to learn a thing or two from them. And today's guest is someone we all know and love. This guy has got to be the single most creative person I've ever encountered in my life, and I mean that in the silliest and most serious way possible. He let a live audience electrocute him on Conan once, and that's only one example of how brilliantly he plays with this boundless medium we call comedy. I'm always excited to talk to people about comedy, but I don't think there's anyone else on the planet I get more excited to talk to about this stuff. So, without further ado, I'd love to welcome my friend and a comedian who has permanently altered my brain chemistry, Ian Abramson.
Hello!
Hello, Ian. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Oh, you know what? I was doing good, but then you said great, and I think I'm going to hop on the bandwagon. I'm feeling
nice.
Pretty great.
Nice. Excellent.
I'm really excited to have you in the room today.
I'm excited that this exists. You are doing such a cool thing with this podcast. I love it.
That's very sweet. Have you ever written a joke before?
No, but I have had them... And that's comedy, folks. And that's
we
how
will,
you write.
We will
you
edit
start
that
running
in post.
Down. Nope. We leave it in. So
no,
that
what
we
we're gonna
show.
Do?
Yes, please.
We're gonna take that as a clip, and we're just gonna insert it throughout the episode. Anytime there's a moment of silence, it's just gonna be.
Oh man, that can be the beep if somebody curses.
Yes, yeah. Perfect. And we have actually never sworn on this podcast before.
Wow. Way to avoid the explicit rating.
Yeah, that's not true. We swore a lot just earlier today when I recorded another episode. So, you are the second person I'm talking to today, which means that you are my less favorite of the two people.
Great. Love to hear it. Love to hear it. Happy. No. The honesty is what I appreciate.
That's not true. You are not the
so you're
the
saying
middle child
that the
here.
Thing that I appreciated actually was not part of what you said. I said, I appreciate the honesty, and your response was, that's not true.
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
Okay, understood.
And you know what? It's nice to lie. It's nice to lie sometimes. So, Ian, I think that you are such a phenomenal comedian and so much fun to watch and such an interesting comedian in that you do so many things that are like so unique to your voice and so playful with the medium and so experimental. And I really want to talk to you about your process. Would you like to do that with me?
That's so nice. I'm overwhelmed and flattered. Thank you. That means a lot. I also think you are a great comedian. So I'm so excited to hear that from you. Yes, I'm down to talk process as best as I can.
Awesome. Let's just start by asking, how does your writing process work? Do you have a specific routine that you follow where you write at like a certain time of day, or are you a little more chaotic than that?
Of course I'm a little more chaotic than that, but also I think for a comedian doing stand-up, I have a chaotic system that is somewhat disciplined, and that already means that I'm sitting down to write more than a lot of comics, right? Mm-hmm. I have to kind of do it my own way that works for my brain, but that's kind of the only rule, is trying to work whatever system works for you around yourself, right?
Yeah.
If you wish you were writing more, ask yourself what you could do to make that easier for you, right? Mm-hmm. Change it up from there. Sometimes my writing schedule is literally being awake at 4 a.m. and being like, okay, now I'm in the right headspace. Let's go. That's not a good sign.
Yeah.
but I go with the flow to that extent, right? Like, I'm like, if that's the week I'm having, if that's when I'm going to feel the most aware because I'm awake and anxious and all this stuff, I'm going to pretend like it's the middle of the day. I'll live my life like that for a little bit.
Got it. So does that mean that you only start writing if you're in that headspace, or do you ever start writing and then do things to get in that headspace?
I love to sit down and make myself get into the headspace.
How do you do that?
When I'm out and about, I will write down little ideas, mostly in my phone, right? Like less than a sentence, and then move on. I try to do that as just like a little bucket of stuff to go over when I sit down to write. So the first thing I'll do is I'll go over that, right? Mm-hmm. And the way that I do that is I make a quadrant on a legal pad. This is the system that I've adapted these days. I have a quadrant on a legal pad, and that gives me four different places to kind of organize thoughts. I pretend like it's four different whiteboards, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just a sheet of paper. So that then I can start being like, this idea feels like a one-liner. Let me write it in one square.
Right.
This idea is like a premise. There's definitely not a punchline. It needs to be something. So I just kind of put it in another square without thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, so the first thing I'll do is go over that, right? And just kind of think about those things. Then I'll look at a recent set list and I'll say, which of these jokes do I either want to improve because I don't like them enough, or what is working very well that I can expand? So those are the two things that I look at first, right? But all of this still is not just like generating material, but this is a process that gets me into the headspace.
Right.
Right? A lot of that stuff feels closer to like making a playlist or something, right?
Yeah.
That's like the brain power that it feels like. So then I almost look at what's in front of me as a to-do list then, right? I'm going through and I'm like, okay, so I have this square of one-liners. Let me turn each of these. Let me actually do the like wording really quick for these four or five one-liners that I have. Great. Okay. Those are new jokes. The next time I go up, I can just pull those. Mm-hmm. I have those. They're done. They're mm-hmm. ready. I don't have to think about them again till they're ready to try out. And then I'll go to the premises and be like, okay, what is the quickest and easiest way that I could get to the bottom of what this premise is, right? When I try to start longer than that, it doesn't work great for me. I wish I was better at it. I do have jokes that are longer, and I'll talk about that as a process, but that's almost like a separate thing.
How is it separate? I mean, this is what we're here for. So.
For sure.
So how is it separate?
I will take you through it. So we'll pretend like those premises are on their own little square.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that I would work on something longer like that one at a time and then kind of like put it down and bring it back and put it down and bring it back as I'm playing with different ones, right? Just kind of tinkering away, seeing how could I make this weird thing that can't just be 10 seconds better, mm-hmm. right? These are like high concept pieces. They could be monologues or anything like that. But I'm thinking of those things in kind of a different category because you can't, well, I can't just have jokes and I can't just have these kind of like high concept. I feel like an asshole calling them set pieces, but like okay, and then I'll pull a balloon animal out of my pants. If you are setting up a tent, the first thing you do is you set up the middle tent, and then you start setting up the other parts of the tent, right? Mm-hmm. And so the way that I'm putting together a set list feels like the same thing. Is like what's the highest? You've got your jokes that you know are really good. And if I've taken the time to really make it like a longer piece like that, then generally they've become reliable.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm shaking so
much.
Yeah,
got a strict warning at the beginning not to bump the table. And I am loving actually how much you are bumping this table. I think
I
it's really fun.
It's
this is
wild.
It's a little treat for the audience. It's like an ASMR experience.
Yes, I should say, just if you haven't seen me, if you picture me, my head is the size of a car.
Yes.
So it bounces on a table.
It's okay. Ian's just a wild man, and he gesticulates a lot, and I appreciate that about you. And,
so nice. I mean, just to hear the word gesticulate.
I know, right? I try to say it a couple times a day.
When I got the strict warning, I hope I apologize. Perhaps I didn't, but I'm sorry that I do it, but also I can't promise it's not going to keep happening. I just am too into you get me talking. It's like, dude, I'm like a bull in a library, you know, ready
you know
to learn.
I feel like this is a little bit a part of your process is like like physically engaging with headbutting the microphone.
Yes, right.
Like physically engaging. I mean, it sounds silly, but you really are such an active performer. You move a lot on stage. You use your whole body as a part of your act. I feel like what we're doing right now, just having this conversation, you just as a person are so animated and like physically engaging when you are speaking. And so, like I said, audience people, if you're out there listening, if anyone is listening to this at the end of the world, you get what you pay for, and it's a free podcast.
Wow.
So
love it. Apologies to the editor. I'm fully taking responsibility. So if you're listening to this being like, God, they're going to think I'm a bad editor, it's my fault.
We love you, John. So I do want to ask, just kind of back
yes,
to
please.
The questions, when it comes to writing, mm-hmm. and this is something that I would ask of like what you do, but also some advice for other people.
Yeah.
What are some things that you think take a joke from being good to being great?
To me, I think it almost always is point of view.
Okay.
The point of view of a joke is everything. When I'm saying point of view, I mean the logic of the joke, mm-hmm. but I also mean when I think about like what is the difference between a good joke and a great joke, I think of point of view, right? Mm-hmm. What like a joke about dating, right? What is the point of view on the joke of dating? If it's dating is hard, we don't have a very strong point of view, mm-hmm. but that can be a starting point. So what's better than that? Dating is hard. Well, it's hard to meet people. Okay, that's a bit stronger. And then you kind of have to keep peeling back, finding the point of view, mm-hmm. which is to say, yeah, please.
Well, I was just going to say, you have to kind of find that specificity that makes it a joke worth listening to. Because, like, if you say dating is hard, maybe for me, like, maybe I'm hot and I don't have problems like this. Maybe I have a great personality and dating isn't hard. So that's not going to connect with me.
Sure.
But if you say to me, dating as a platypus is hard, yeah. I'm going to be like, I'm not a platypus, so I want to hear what this platypus has to say. Is that kind of like what you're getting at with like point of view, like bringing in like a tinge of specificity to a joke to kind of give it structure?
It'll actually be easier. I'm not jumping ahead, but I'm going to make us do this with an example. It'll
Jump
be
ahead.
Easier to talk about as an example. I know that we're going to like make jokes later, but mm-hmm. I think it's easier to show. Okay. In high school, where was your favorite place to go?
Chicken tender place.
Chicken tender place. I love that. That makes me think of like the kind of like snack shops that football games have and mini golf places, just to, like a place to get a good chicken tender. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's think of chicken tender as the subject.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Love it.
The interesting things about chicken tender to me is that they're universal. Everybody knows what a chicken tender is. It's kind of funny to me that a chicken tender is this like very lowbrow, easy food
mm-hmm.
when it's like the death of a chicken was involved.
Right.
So basically what I start taking this and I'm just kicking around a ball looking for the point of view. How do I feel about chicken tenders, right? Mm-hmm. It's very like it's silly, right? But if this is going to be a one-liner, then what like even if it's based on wordplay, right? How did the chicken tender cross the road? If that was the joke we were trying to write here.
Mm-hmm.
The strength of the joke, the difference between a good punchline and a great punchline there is how strong our point of view is on this bit, right?
Right.
If I say, how did the chicken cross the road? Well, he certainly didn't walk. He was dead if he was a chicken tender.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's something. It's not, I'm not pretending like that is a great joke, but I'm saying that it's better than just a rhyme, right?
Yeah.
people talk about like puns being bad, and I've gotten a lot of shit over the years because I refuse to not do puns, but that's because I think that a pun is an opportunity to like imply a new reality, right? Like it's just like rhyming two things that aren't connected, and I think that that hinges on actually putting a weird image, platypus-esque, into someone's head, mm-hmm. right? If I talk about gum control, I have not yet said anything funny.
Mm-hmm.
I've made a rhyme.
Right.
But you and I are both thinking of options about gum control.
Yeah, my wheels are spinning.
Right. And would you agree that everywhere that it's spinning aligns with your point of view personally?
I think so, yeah.
So if you had to do 5 minutes on gum control, we would just learn a lot about how you feel in your heart about gum.
Mm-hmm.
And that set would hinge on how deep you were able to dig about how you feel about it, right? Mm-hmm. Which is true also for somebody that felt the exact opposite way, right? Because part of what both of those people that are, these imaginary people that are incredible at stand-up, one of them is like, the government fully, I think, could take away our guns if they wanted to,
mm-hmm.
right? And the other person is like, there should not be any guns on Earth, right? I don't know, these two imaginary extremes.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are trying to sit down and think like, well, what good points does the other one have? And how can I be funny as shit about how stupid those are? You know, like that's still kind of what it boils down to.
Yeah.
And so to me, whether you are being the silliest person or the rawest person or any of like whatever kind of joke you're doing, mm-hmm. it has to do with finding that point of view. And this does not mean that I'm thinking that like I am great at that. That's not at all what that means.
Yeah.
But it means that that's what I've observed about what works and doesn't work when I've seen comedy. You know, that's what I aim for when I can. But also when things struggle, it almost always is, if something doesn't get a laugh, it's often because it doesn't make sense or it doesn't make sense in the way that you need it to.
Mm-hmm.
But if something gets kind of a medium laugh, it's usually because the point of view is either messy or weak.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll make any sense to anyone else, but it makes a lot of sense to me.
You'll have to explain it to me later because I am fully talking out of my ass.
No, it's...
This is all the problem with a conversation like this is like, you know, over a decade I've thought about all of this stuff a lot,
yeah.
but to myself, like just for myself, you know?
Yeah.
Like this is it's the equivalent of asking a D&D fan, like, tell me about your world.
Yeah.
And like the next hour is just like, so that means that if you were born in this part of the country 300 years ago,
mm-hmm.
it's like, whoa.
Right.
So yeah, you open this Pandora's box.
I love
Normally
it.
I deflect.
This is why I like talking to you about this stuff. I really think that you are so considerate of this as like an art form, and that is so evident in your work.
That's nice. Thank you.
Of course. I really could follow this thread of
guide
point
us
of
away,
view.
Please. Keep going.
But I am going to return because I have some other questions for you.
Push it. You can, as soon as I start going off
topic.
Shut
up, Ian. It's my turn. I'm just kidding. I would never say that to you except for the one time I just did.
It works. I encourage it.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about your performance style. So for those of you listening who might not be super familiar with Ian's comedy, for those of you who are, you might know what I'm talking about here, but you do tell some straightforward kind of traditional stand-up jokes in your set. But you also do more experimental, performative, kind of theatrical, alternative comedy bits. And I guess I want to know, in your mind, do you distinguish a joke from a bit, and what distinguishes the two for you?
This is a very thoughtful question, and all you're really asking is how I think about these types of things. Because if you watch me do an hour of comedy, you'll be like, right, this part feels like you are doing some form of recognizably stand-up, and then other parts of it are like rejecting that mm-hmm. in one level or another, right? I'm like, okay, now you're going to listen to me do a monologue for a few minutes. And I don't worry about transitioning to that more than that, basically.
Yeah. I guess, like, how do you feel out if an idea will work better as a more traditional setup punchline versus needing to be an act out or needing props or needing to be, like, repetitive or any of the many different ways that you have found to, like, tease the idea of a joke into something else?
For sure. So I have a couple of different buckets that I'm always throwing things into, not literal buckets, but like mental buckets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one bucket is subject. It would be interesting to do a subject, and I'll talk you through a bit that I have not yet cracked perfectly. Mm. This is great. I've done it on stage. At this point, I've definitely worked on these for over a year, and I don't think that there's anything good about them.
There's something good. It might not be there yet.
I'm not even being self-deprecating. I'm just like, I've worked on it for over a year, and I don't have 5 minutes on the topic of chess yet. And okay. It's all about chess, right? So somehow teaching the audience chess on a basic enough level is going to be part of this joke, mm-hmm. right? So that somebody who knows chess is enjoying this, and somebody who doesn't know chess is not like, I don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
On some level, I have to figure that out, and that proves challenging. Especially for me, who would rather go off and play with a mousetrap and an Alexa and all these other things, yep. right? I make myself have to earn things like that. Because another bucket that I have are things like a mousetrap and an Alexa and things that are interesting and the audience is familiar with, right? Everybody knows what an Alexa is. If I pull out a mousetrap, everybody recognizes that is a mousetrap.
Hold on, I think the mic's cut out.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
Can you guys hear yourselves?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, my headphones cut out.
Oh, never mind. That's okay. Hey, you know what? This is just
better
a fun
to be
little
safe
break
than
for the
sorry.
Pod. That moment of the podcast was sponsored by Christian Borky, operator of the Busted Business Bureau podcast, who is helping us record today. Thank you, Christian Borky. Where were you, Ian?
So another bucket that I have is like things to play with that would be fun, mm-hmm. right? The criteria for that bucket is too weird to describe, but it's just like a big pile of weird things that props, we'll say. Okay, mm-hmm. that's an I didn't mean to not even call them props, and then all of a sudden I realized that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, okay. Ian Abramson, big prop guy.
I mean, yes, I am. Like, listen, I get it.
But you do it just enough to not be called a prop comic.
I've been called a prop comic. If you're trying to insult me by comparing me to Gallagher and Carrot Top, two of the most successful comedians of the last 50 years, then what you have is a fundamental misunderstanding of my career.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, Carrot Top is selling out Vegas every night. Do you love him? No, but also, dude, I would kill to see that man's hour right now. That must be incredible. He never stops writing. He's yeah. always putting in new jokes.
And he's jacked
for the hell of it. That's how you know he's just like,
just
yeah.
for the love of the game.
Just for the love of the game.
Oh my God, finish with the buckets. I got to hear about these buckets.
Beautiful. Okay. So there's like the prop bucket. There is the
weird things bucket.
Yes, right. But basically, any of these buckets could be attached to anything from any of the other buckets, mm-hmm. let's say, right? So that means thinking about things. Oh, another bucket is things that I would love to do on stage,
okay.
basically,
yeah.
right? Working backwards from okay, I can't sing, but I would love, it would be fun to have a bit where I get to sing.
Mm-hmm.
How do I solve that problem, right? Because getting great at singing is not something that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be shrill to the audience. I have been, and I have bits that intentionally play with that, but I try to keep my screaming away from the microphone. You know, I try to take care of the audience in that way. But perhaps to mixed results, you know, I'm sure there are people that it's like, this is a little too much.
Yeah.
And that's okay. My point though is that I try and approach what I like to do from every angle at once, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like a prop, in the same way that anybody could do jokes about anything, I'm most interested in like what is it fun to use incorrectly? What is it fun to mess around with? In comedy, it's a lot of building up suspense and releasing suspense. Therefore, like a mousetrap just demonstrates that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're setting a mouse trap,
it's a really good visual
response.
Metaphor for the thing that you're saying. Like it's not even a metaphor, really. It's just a direct visual representation to help illustrate your point. Yeah.
Right. So trying to work backwards from something like that, because that's interesting. That's not a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly not a point of view.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But that's why it's in a bucket and not on stage in that way.
Yeah.
Right? So
you're kind of like a collage artist, but for comedy. Like you have all the different pieces that aren't necessarily connected, and your art is finding ways to turn them into a piece of art. Like your art is the act of collaging these thoughts together into something bigger.
There's definitely something to that. It feels like, so that's like me collecting a bunch of bullshit,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I'm suddenly sitting down at a blank piece of paper, having just finished all the quadrant shit that I laid out for you. And I'm thinking, well, what do I want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's when I look at the buckets and I'm like, what would be fun to play with? But part of that includes, what do I want to say? What do I want to talk about? Chess. Right. We'll use chess as a subject. I have written, here is every chess piece, but it is like the king is a CEO, the queen is a CFO, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here is the nuclear family, right? Mom, dad, son, dog. Like I've mapped these out that far
mm-hmm.
in every direction that I can, right? Trying to like just play with it and be like, I want to talk about chess,
mm-hmm.
right? And I I've spent hours on each individual piece being like, what's interesting about this? You know, the bishop is interesting because it goes sideways. And what does that mean about religion? That's weird.
Yeah.
You know, I have friends that are obsessed with chess.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just pick their brain. Right. That's I love research. And that's like a big part of research is like keeping track of another bucket is just like what my friends are into, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have different friends that know different things. And so my friend Danny, who now lives in China, is obsessed with chess. So I was like, tell me what a rook means to you. And he was like, that's your defense. If two rooks are facing each other, it is impossible to make either of them unsafe
mm-hmm.
because they just protect each other. And I was like, that you just had an immediate answer at all is wild.
Yeah.
To me, right? I'm like reaching into the ether and I'm being like, I bet there's an answer here. Right?
Yeah.
And it's so
It's
fun.
Actually like right here in front
yes.
of your face.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, right. That seems obvious now. You know? So that gives me something to play with,
mm-hmm.
you know? But your larger question is, how do you write a longer bit versus a smaller bit? If you, like in essence, right? So in that way, I try and start by thinking of a bit a version of it that is no longer than a minute. What is the beginning, middle, and end of something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And then I try and pump out as many jokes either in my head or on paper, like here's a list of jokes on these topics, right? And then I will try to put together a first draft from that and just be like, this is going to be too long, right? Mm-hmm. Let me write a too long version. And knowing that I'm going to, as brutally as I can, cut anything that I possibly can, right? I want it to be at least a little painful that I'm losing some jokes that I like.
Yeah.
And that way I can argue with myself about why it would be worth putting them in elsewhere. Oh, no, not really. And then I lose arguments with myself. You know? But a lot of times I'm not actually – a lot of times I will be thinking about a bit like that for days or weeks, just kind of like on the bus being like, oh, right, that thing, weird. And slowly mapping it out. Then let's say that I have a 5-minute piece, right? I've been working on a bit with Alexa, and that will probably end up being a 5-minute bit. And that is one half letting yourself play and the other half forcing a structure on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's knowing both of those when you go up so that you have at least like 10 seconds to just kind of like try something with whatever it is you're playing with so that there's some opportunity to grow with it.
Mm-hmm.
But then also really doing your best to figure out like what are these same tent poles for this bit, right? What are the strong pieces of it? And how can I evenly distribute the strong pieces of it as I start to figure this out? Does that make sense?
That makes total sense.
Right.
Yeah, that's I love how you have somehow found a system that allows you to be completely like unhinged and chaotic in your thought process, but also shockingly organized. Like I don't know how you have managed to find this, but it works. Yeah. And it's amazing to hear you talk about, because I'm never going to talk to anyone else who thinks about comedy this way. I really feel that. I think that like everyone thinks about it so differently, and I will never talk to anyone who thinks about it the way that the other people I've talked to about the show or on the show have thought about it. But I feel like this is so specific to you. I mean, it's
love
so
that. Okay, because this is just my brain and it's the only brain I've ever had.
Yeah.
It's
a good one.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
We're friends.
We
give
are.
Me at least a little bit of shit. What does this all sound like to you? I feel insane saying all of this.
You sound insane.
Okay.
Yeah, you do.
Thank
but,
you for being honest. Yes.
But I think that like I
it doesn't
think
need to make sense to anyone else.
This is gonna I have really gassed up all my friends on the show so far, and I have meant all the things that I've said because I have incredible friends that I respect a lot, and
yeah.
I really do think that you sound insane, but in a way that I think
I wouldn't
that,
believe you if you said no.
I think that is kind of the mark of an artist, though, is that like
that's
the thought
nice.
Process behind the artwork, like you can watch someone paint a masterpiece and like kind of see like how they decided to put the brushstrokes where they were and stuff. But like, I can't fathom, like Michelangelo said he saw the angel inside the marble and carved it free, like carved to set it free. Like, that is an unfathomable way of thinking to me. I don't see an angel inside of a block of marble. I see a cube of marble, right?
Right.
I think that what you're saying right now is like, it is esoteric. And it is,
for sure.
Like, it's
I
it's
don't
so
try it. Like, this is not what I talk about at parties. It's not, right? I'm not like, this is
you're
a
going
con-
to the wrong
this
parties.
Is a podcast. I don't get invited to the right parties.
Oh my God. I really do think though that like to have this specific of a thought process and this specific of a way of working through jokes, and I think this is why you have such a distinctive voice and such a like clear style that is like I don't think you're the only person to ever do
sure,
some of the
sure,
things
sure,
that you do.
For sure.
But I think
I don't
that,
either, yeah.
I think that I could tell if you were to just like put down on paper in front of me, here are some jokes, tell me who did them. I feel like I could point out jokes that were yours.
Wow, that's very kind. That means the world, actually. I get what you're saying. That's so kind.
I really respect the art of it all, and I know that you do too, and it's so evident and so clear in the way that you talk about it.
I know that it's not supposed to matter to anybody else, but it gets to matter to me, so I just let it all matter as much as it can.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's great. That's really the best way to treat it, I think.
Yeah.
I just brought up your voice, and this is going to be the last question that I ask you.
Okay.
I just brought up your kind of comedic voice, comedic style, and I think that your comedic voice is very fun to watch because it's not just you presenting as everyday Ian Abramson, but a heightened version of yourself. And I guess I want to talk to you about this onstage persona in a, I guess is the best word for it. But do you think that giving yourself the freedom to be this like heightened version of yourself, do you think that makes writing comedy any easier or harder for you?
I think that that is aptly observed and well asked, and I'm going to flip it on its head in a way that is a little annoying. But I think that every comedian has some version of that, right? Mm. Like every, you know, like even like, dude, Ali Sadiq has incredible comedy specials. One of the rawest. I think he cries in one of them in a way that you're like on board with, right?
Yeah.
And still, right? Like that's Ali Sadiq the performer.
Yeah.
It is. And that's not an insult or anything, right? But like even if you keep that layer that thin or as thick as I do, either way, that's interesting to me, which is why I make it so thick. I like to play with that. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. Follow-up question, do you think that having this screen of a persona, of a heightened version of yourself in between you and the audience, do you think that makes accessing vulnerability easier or more difficult? Do you think the vulnerability that you find yourself expressing on stage, is that performative or is it true vulnerability?
I think I aim for true vulnerability if I'm presenting vulnerability, even if I undercut it the next moment, the way that I do that is by trying to be actually vulnerable in one way or another, even inside, like I try to actually embarrass myself if I can, right? If I, that's the way to kind of access that. I try to, if I'm talking about a vulnerable subject, I do my best to come at it with a point of view that is either thoughtful or vulnerable or something, right? But that said, what I end up putting out is just very silly and like weird and absurd. But to me, it is. I couldn't tell you much about Paul Simon's personality, right? Mm-hmm. But you get a strong sense of him in all of his songs. Who the hell is Owl? Owl, right? Like me and Julio, I do not believe that the me and me and Julio was Paul Simon.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like there's no way it was. I don't think he wants you to think that.
Yeah, Paul Simon would never have a friend named Julio. Are we kidding?
Down by the schoolyard?
Down by the schoolyard?
That would be a weird, right?
What are they doing hanging out by a schoolyard? Paul Simon shouldn't be allowed within 500 feet of a schoolyard.
Children. Can't live with them. Can't live within 300 feet of the school. Okay. To wrap that up, basically, I am not interested at all in general in an artist saying, here are the true facts about my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm less interested in that. You know, I've read some great memoirs, but it's not what I'm drawn to, you know? What I love is when you get a sense, when you watch a movie directed by somebody and you're just like, I don't know anything about you, but holy shit, that's awesome. I love that. I think that all of that can exist in comedy in the same way. And as a, like, dude, in seventh grade, I loved Weird Al too much. You know, like I was like I was finding messages in Weird Al songs in a way that made me closer to Charles Manson than anyone else. Like I was like, damn, dude, Dare to Be Stupid. It's a real ballad. Oh, my God. I mean, I'm in seventh grade,
yeah,
right? Because, like, every seventh grader is obsessing over the lyrics of their favorite artist, and mine is Weird Al.
Yeah, I was in that boat in fourth grade when I think Poodle Hat was the name of it came out with Amish
wow.
Paradise on it. And
I can't believe I said seventh grade, and you were like, you know.
Just so everyone knows, I'm a little younger than Ian. But
what's funny is I think that we're talking about exactly the same period. That was like such the Poodle Hat.
Yeah.
It was like, but yeah.
I would walk around just like banging my head to Amish Paradise as
amazing.
If I could relate at all to the Gangster Paradise or the
Amish
experience.
Right.
Like,
yeah. It, God. But there's just something magical about it.
Yeah. Oh, man. This has been so fun so far. It's not
it.
Over yet.
Yeah.
Because it's time to write a joke together. Are you ready for that? Do you feel up to the task?
I do.
Okay, so the way that it's going to work is we're going to take a couple minutes to try and write a joke together, and we can start off one of two ways.
Okay.
We can start with a premise that you are working on, maybe you haven't figured out yet, and want like to bounce off me or something. We can start with any kind of idea you might have. Or we can start with a word from a random word generator.
Love that.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. Well, I'm going to start with my little list of stuff to see if there's anything good there.
Okay. How long is this list?
This is just one. It's more than I'm trying to
it's
think
just,
of like.
It's just one word, but I have to sound it out, and it's really long.
Oh, fuck. I had a good one. I'm trying to remember these. Okay, great. Something I do in my set is I'll usually end by doing a rapid fire series of impressions,
mm-hmm.
and that lets me try out premises lightning fast, and if something sucks it doesn't matter, I'm moving on to it.
Right.
Okay? So the only thing I wrote down was impression of a kid trying not to run at the pool.
A kid trying not to run at the pool. You want to hear something really funny?
Hit me.
The random word that we got was
yeah.
slippery.
Whoa!
Yep.
So
folks. this is in the cards.
Wow.
All right,
I
a
love
kid
it.
Trying not to run at the pool. And what is the idea here? What have you is that all you have established so far, or is there a point you're trying to get to, or?
So like I said, I go and that's what I thought of at some point that I just jotted down. That's what I wrote down. Impression,
okay.
Kid trying not to run at the pool.
And what does that look like to you?
It looks like tight walking. It looks like excitement,
mm-hmm.
like bursting through it,
mm.
right? All of which could be attached very easily to another point of view. So you we're going to get away from this idea of it ending up as an impression, because we're going to do it
yes,
a little
totally.
Bigger than that.
It's so funny that you went in that direction, because
yeah.
I immediately went to like shame, like a kid has pooped his pants at the public pool and is trying to like find his way to the bathroom before anyone notices,
wow.
but he's got to like penguin walk to the bathroom.
I can write on this?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
I would love that.
So, perfect. This is excellent, because you've already found our major tent poles, right? So we have our beginning and our end, okay? A kid at the beginning wants to high dive, let's say. Kid at the end wants to leave because he's pooped. And that means that the middle is probably he pooped his pants. Would you agree?
Yes, I would agree. Perhaps he was afraid once he got at the top of the high dive. Does that mean he climbed down, clenching his butt cheeks? Does that mean that he jumped in the pool and is now both soggy and full of poopy pants? What is this? What is our narrative here?
Love this. Okay, so what this, I, oh God, yeah, you're doing this great. I'm going to... What I have in front of me now is like a timeline, right?
Sure.
Of, wants to go on the high dive, pooped his pants, wants to leave. Everything you just said I love, so I'm going to try and talk through why I'm going to make some quick and simple decisions about those choices, mm-hmm. and knowing that I can move them around as I go. But I just try to place them and see how it feels, because I know I'm going to move it around a million times.
Yeah.
So going up and down is great, but I probably want to save that for between wants to high dive and pooped his pants, mm-hmm. which is the hardest time to fill. Because once somebody poops their pants, the stakes are so high.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things that you can play with in that area that I'm not as worried about coming up with jokes for there. So first I'm going to write, like, I'm going to guess that about 3/4 of the way to the midpoint, we'll do something about like going up and down on the ladder,
mm-hmm.
up and down ladder. Then I'm going to say, great, if that's 3/4, then that means that halfway through the halfway point, the quarter mark, we're going up the ladder for the first time.
Motivation for going on the high dive.
Great, hit me.
Is that something that he wants to do for himself, or is he trying to impress someone at the pool, or has he been dared to do it? What kind of things can we spice this up with?
I have such an annoying answer for you.
Okay.
We're not there yet.
Perfect.
So that means that we're probably good with the first half, because we know he's going to go up the ladder, and then he's going to go up and down the ladder, and mm-hmm. then he poops his pants. I vote that he poops his pants after he jumps. Okay?
Okay.
So, like, he lands. That, because what that does is, from pooped pants to wants to pooped, we can do this without getting gross even a little bit.
Yeah.
If what we do is he gets out of the pool, and then he starts. That's when he realizes something is amiss in my shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And then he walks funny. Probably tries to leave one way and has to leave another way.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Right? So we have that. Beyond that, now we're going to jump to point of view, motivation, etc. That means throw out pool, throw out high dive, throw out all of that.
Okay.
Okay. You tell me, Cassidy. Let's just together list things that in our life we have been scared to try.
Okay.
Roller coasters used to scare me.
Okay. Food used to scare me. I used to be afraid to try new foods.
What was scary about it?
The unknown. I only liked eating foods that I had already eaten before.
Yeah.
So,
what did it feel like to eat a food that was unknown and you didn't like?
It made me feel tingly all over. It was
tingly.
Shocking. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like,
It was gross. It was
right.
It was like a repulsive feeling.
Repulsive. Yeah, help me compare it to another feeling that I might know, or another situation that I might know.
I get the sense from you that you're not a person who is bothered by things that are typically shocking, like gore or like vomit or like bodily emulsions.
I don't love it, but I don't have a strong reaction.
I always have a strong reaction to gore on screen, and that's the same kind
of
reaction.
It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's like truly gross to you.
Yeah. I'm not that way anymore.
Yeah,
lots of therapy.
For sure.
Thank you to my therapist.
I hear you. That's it. I totally get it. Don't even worry. So, okay. To me, that's the emotional anchor that I would want to attach to something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Is finding like what for me, right? It doesn't have to actually be the high dive. Let me find that actual thing, that scary thing.
Right.
And in fact, the further from pool that I can get, I feel like the better job I'm doing.
Yeah.
So we have food. We have the unknown. What are other things that we have to try? Because part of what's nerve-wracking about being at a pool as a kid is the, like, I have to do this.
Yes.
You know, my mom paid for lessons. I've been dropped off here. Whatever it is. Not going on the high dive is going to be much more awkward than just doing it.
Mm-hmm.
What are other situations that we feel that in?
Things like school plays.
School plays, but you opt into a school play. So what?
No,
what
not necessarily. I was put in a lot of school plays as a child.
Tell me more. This is perfect.
We had class plays, so the class would have to put on a little play. And so we would be given or assigned roles based on our personality, essentially, and we would have to you know, perform for the entire school and all of our parents and things like that. And so that was a big anxiety-inducing experience, one that I did not often look forward to.
When you think of that memory of being backstage, being nervous, et cetera, is it the fear of... It's not the fear of messing up for me, but it's something like that. It's not that specific, I guess, you know?
I guess for me, and yeah, maybe this goes back to needing to talk to my therapist more, but it's always been the fear of people not liking me, like, sure, when I'm performing in front of them. Like, yeah, I mean, I still get that today, like, sure, like before I go out on stage or after I come off stage.
Sure. Yeah, I mean... Listen, we're all telling jokes into a microphone to make people laugh.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not pretending like I'm immune to that even a little bit. I get that. So, okay. What's the equivalent to pooping your pants at the school on stage? Or what's at the pool? What's the equivalent to pooping your pants at the pool at... in the school play?
Forgetting all your lines.
Forgetting all your lines. Love that. Truly caught off guard. Okay, so I know because we have a short amount of time, mm-hmm, and the thing that we would do is rush this process along, right? But this could take years,
yes,
right? This could be on and on.
And this is all yours to keep. So if you think this is entertaining enough, please continue playing with it for years if you want.
Thank you.
Of
Can't
course.
Wait. So if I was going to have to perform this in 10 minutes, what I would do with this as my outline is I would... If that was the situation I would do, this is kind of a left turn, so apologies, but this is the game we're playing.
Mm-hmm.
I would try to find a almost non sequitur point of view that, mm-hmm, is interesting, right? A completely different anxiety. So, okay, and here we go. This is what I would do. I would say, this is my impression of a man who will be fired if he doesn't go off the high dive. And then I would do a quick and dirty version of trying to be like, first, of course, he's going up, da 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 da. Like, I would play that out. I would have to flesh that out and, mm-hmm, find at least a couple jokes each time. But then I would go up and try and, as quickly as I could, get through those talking points and hope that I can find things to jump off of and be fun. Working it out more than that, mm-hmm, gets in the way to me, because then I'm more obsessed with memorizing, and stand-up is happening in the moment,
yeah,
always. And you do yourself a favor by making yourself stumble over words as opposed to being rote sometimes. But I'm not good. I feel like I'm terrible at memorization, and I'm not like naturally the most... loose performer. But it's easier for me to push in that direction,
mm-hmm,
than it is to become like a George Carlin who is excellent with every word. It's like recited,
right,
perfectly.
Well, Ian.
Yeah.
I think we have run out of time.
Great. Perfect.
I'm so sorry that we didn't get farther into this pooping on the high dive joke.
I think we got pretty far. I think if I had to do this in 10 minutes, I would be ready to do this.
Okay. Well, I look forward to seeing you do it. Great. Seeing you do it.
I'll do it on the show of this podcast. Perhaps.
Oh my God. Yes. That'd we do fun. Have a live show this Thursday.
Love it.
This podcast is actually airing after that live show. But
I'll tell you this, it went great.
It went amazingly. You should have seen this poop joke. It crushed. And then Ian forgot all his lines and pooped his pants on stage and had to stumble off. Well, Ian, I am going to wrap us up. Is that okay with you?
Please.
Awesome. Thank you again to our guest today, Ian Abramson, who you can follow on all socials at Ian Abramsons. That's with an S, as if there are two of him, or more. A huge thanks to Michael Salas-Holtzman for creating the music for the podcast. Another huge thanks to John O'Neill for editing the podcast. A big thanks to Christian Borky for helping us record today. She runs the podcast Busted Business Bureau. You should listen to it. It's very fun. And the biggest thanks of all to the Lincoln Lodge in Chicago, Illinois, the heart of the Chicago comedy scene, where this podcast is produced and recorded. Thank you for tuning in. See you next time. How to Write a Joke.